From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Alaska doctors have temporary permission from the state to use telehealth to prescribe a controlled but life-saving drug used to treat opioid addiction. As Claire Strempel reports for KTOO, state officials say they'd like to make the change permanent.
Once a patient says they're ready for treatment, physicians like Dr. Janice Schufelt want to get them the medication that prevents withdrawal symptoms as soon as possible.
Honestly, even a few days makes a difference because of how many people are dying from opioid overdoses in our state.
She got to sidestep a significant barrier to care for people with opioid addictions during the pandemic, the clinic visit. That is, until February, when the state's emergency order lapsed and the state tightened restrictions on telehealth. That meant she and her patients had to schedule an in-person appointment with another doctor to prescribe the drug, buprenorphine. It's also called by its brand name, Suboxone. An extra step and extra time when withdrawal symptoms can manifest within hours.
Every patient I speak to, they tell me about their friends or family members who have died. So I really think time is of the essence, and even a few days can make a difference. I've had people overdose and die who were waiting to get into treatment.
Last week, the state's medical board approved an emergency order from the state health department to reinstate buprenorphine prescriptions by telehealth temporarily. But there was a four-month period where providers had to set up in-person appointments to get prescriptions. In that time, more than 200 patients asked to start medicated treatment at Dr. Schufelt's clinic alone. The lapse came at a critical time. Hospital visits for overdoses involving heroin have increased dramatically in the state since March. Overdose visits from March to May this year are more than double last year's visits over the same period of time. Officials from the state's medical board declined recorded interviews, but wrote in a statement that the board will work to make the change permanent and allow Alaska doctors to prescribe and renew prescriptions for buprenorphine without an in-person appointment.
Medication is a key part of helping people who have opioid use disorder in stopping.
Jeannie Monk is a senior vice president at the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, or ASHNA. She testified before the medical board on behalf of Alaska physicians who said the change is necessary to help their patients. She said the COVID-19 pandemic illuminated a real need.
And because people couldn't go in to see doctors and people in rural areas couldn't travel, giving them access to really life-saving medication by telehealth has been essential.
Buprenorphine typically requires an in-person visit for a prescription because it's categorized as a controlled substance. It's an opioid that works to block withdrawal symptoms, but doesn't get users high like heroin or fentanyl do.
And it took quite a while to kind of get the state medical board to kind of understand the situation and take action.
So even though current state and federal law do not allow that type of drug to be prescribed without an in-person visit, the state's medical board is working to keep the telehealth exemption in place. It cites high rates of opioid overuse, overdose, and death in the state as reasons it will work toward the permanent change. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel for KTOO.
Last weekend, the Alaska Native community and allies gathered at Overstreet Park in Juneau for a candlelight vigil honoring the 215 children found at a residential school in Kamloops, British Columbia. As KTOO's Lindsay Brolini reports, the vigil opened up discussion on the dark past of residential schools, not just in Canada, but the U.S. as well.
When news broke out about the discovery of 215 children buried at the Kamloops Indian Residential School, Indigenous people across Canada mourned. But it wasn't just a Canadian issue.
The reason we sympathize with them is because the same thing that happened in Canada happened in Alaska, in Southeast.
That is Jessica Brown. She is Tlingit from Sitka and organized a vigil for these children. Alaska Native children throughout Alaska were sent to boarding schools up until the 1980s. In some cases, children were taken from their families and put into these schools or into foster homes. Tlingit elder Leona Santiago of the Kagwantan clan is one of these children. She was taken from her family at age 2 and not returned until she was almost 15.
And this loss of all, the discovery of all these children hurts because it makes us think, makes me think of my pain, my tears, that I had to suffer.
Santiago shared her personal experience to give people an idea of what it was like for a child to be taken away from their parents and put into government custody. And she says it was worse for the generations before her who went to boarding schools.
I can't even imagine the pain that they felt. My grandparents, they were told not to speak the language. They were disciplined. They were beaten with the ruler on their hands. Their mouths were washed out with soap.
Yolanda Fulmer is Tlingit of the Tuktan Tan clan. She was another speaker at the vigil, and she says the discovery of these children only confirmed what indigenous people already knew.
Kill the Indian, save the man. These are all variants of the same sentiments that were passed throughout the U.S. and Canada. This was enacted through the genocide of boarding and residential schools.
The effects of boarding schools are not only felt by the children who attended, but their families and communities as well. While in the schools, children were removed from their culture, so they could not pass on their language or their ways of life onto their children and grandchildren.
We see the residual damage even into present day. The painful stories we hold for our loved ones, the tears we try to catch, the heavy hearts and secrets we try to carry for them, they resonate throughout Indigenous countries.
But now that the history of boarding and residential schools is coming to light, people are starting to talk more about this past and begin the healing process. Leona Santiago started the process in her 20s, and she says it's not complete.
So when we heal, we only don't just heal ourselves, we heal what our ancestors have gone through.
After the speeches, two songs were sung to honor and remember the children lost at residential schools. This one playing is a Kaguantan song, The Clan of Santiago. On Monday, June 21st, there is a global memorial for the children found at the Kamloops Indian Residential School. And since more children have been found since the initial discovery in Kamloops, the memorial will honor them as well. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolini.
And that memorial in Juneau is on Monday at 5 p.m. at Overstreet Park. The state of Alaska has a new head state forester. He comes by way of California, where he retired as one of the state's top resource management officials, Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
Alaska's new state forester, Helga Eng, grew up in Oslo, Norway, which is nearly the same latitude as Anchorage.
You know, I've always considered Alaska kind of home in the sense that I was born and raised in a similar climate.
He just finished a 21-year career in California, where despite making his home in the foothills of the Sierra Mountains, the dry heat spells were hard to escape.
That wall of heat of 105 degrees is not something you really get used to, so coming up here is a welcome change, and it's like coming home for me.
Eng spent more than 20 years working for CAL FIRE, the Golden State's Forestry Management and Wildland Firefighting Agency. He was in charge of resource management, which researched different timber practices on state lands. Now, as Alaska's state forester, he oversees more than 260 employees and is in charge of regulating logging on state and private land. His office is attached to the Alaska Department of Natural Resources and is charged with preparing timber sales on state lands to supply local industry.
We are continuing to work actively, as my predecessor did, to reinvigorate a timber industry in the southeast.
Clear-cut logging of old-growth forests is controversial, and there's been increased scrutiny of projects on Prince of Wales Island and other parts of southeast. Eng says it's his job to make sure all voices are heard before making critical land use decisions.
There are several points of view on forest management and timber harvesting, and I do think it's important that all of those views are represented and all the voices are heard. So rest assured there will be ample opportunity for public input into all of the state harvest decisions.
As in California, which has been devastated by wildfires, his job here will also include wildland fire protection. In a statement, DNR Commissioner Corey Feige says, "We are fortunate to have Helga Eng bring his experience north to Alaska." Eng replaces outgoing state forester Chris Mache, who served for 21 years before retiring in February. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.